Joe Montana here. In my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia and invasive pneumococcal disease. Are you 50 or older like me? The CDC now recommends vaccination against pneumococcal disease. Even if you're healthy, your age puts you at increased risk and over 6 times greater risk of hospitalization with pneumococcal pneumonia than adults under 50. Schedule your appointment today at vaxassist.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Welcome in, Bald-Faced Truth, on a Monday after the holiday week with more holiday festivities to come. 503-417-7575, Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano today. And getting ready for the new year and the rematch with Ohio State for the Oregon Ducks in the Rose Bowl. T-minus 2 days, kicks off at 2 o'clock Wednesday, or a little bit after. So about 47 hours removed from the kickoff of the granddaddy of them all. And getting psyched, getting really hyped for this one. Going back and forth on my pick, even though I said last week I'm picking Oregon, Stephen. It's a 2.5 point spread, and I feel like 2.5 point spread in a matchup like this is more than a typical 2.5 point spread. Because if you are putting Ohio State as a 2.5 point favorite, as a 2-loss team that's lost to Oregon before, you must really think they are the better football team.
First of all, it's great that the game is at the Rose Bowl. Yeah. Like, I love that. But I'm 100% with you. Like, every instinct in my body when it comes to gambling would say Ohio State's going to win this game because of the line. Because they're favored by 2.5. They've already played this game. Oregon won. And now it's, 2.5 in Ohio State's lost to Michigan. They've had one really good game against Tennessee. Oregon is the only undefeated team left, yet they're favored. But I kind of flip-flopped, Judah. Like, I was leaning Ohio State at the start when this game, when first found out this was going to be the matchup. I'm kind of leaning Oregon now.
Mm.
I feel like there is a little bit of doubt right now in people's minds about the Oregon Ducks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense. Like, Oregon's not a perfect team. They have flaws, but so does Ohio State. And Ohio State has actually shown them on the field where they've cost them games. Oregon hasn't done that yet. Oregon has played bad and won games. Think about the game at Wisconsin. They didn't play their best. They edged that one out. I feel like Oregon is getting undervalued here, as shocking as it is, as the only undefeated team left in college football. They're kind of being undervalued going into this Rose Bowl. It's a weird spot to be in.
I'm totally with you. And I think a lot of that was when we were hosting last week. We were fresh off the Tennessee game and how good Ohio State looked. And I said on, I think it was Monday's show, I said, this is bias. This is recency bias. People liked Ohio State too much right now. I say that was more of an indictment on Josh Heupel in Tennessee more than it was a proclamation of Ohio State's greatness. Ohio State might be more talented. I just think in this particular spot, I'm going to still pick Oregon. I'm going to pick them in a close game. I think 27-24, right around there, is probably the right spot. Remember, you got the neutral site. You got it could be a slick field. I feel like whenever we see these big games in outdoor venues or venues where the grass is exposed to air a little bit, that people slip and slide. I mean, we see that in Super Bowls that have been at the Rose Bowl or the Orange Bowl. We saw that in the Super Bowl in Glendale. We see it at the Rose Bowl, frankly, in the college Rose Bowl game that's played. And I think we could see that again on Wednesday. But, ultimately, I think Oregon, I think there's some element of team of destiny here. And how poetic would it be to beat Chip Kelly twice in a massive spot and to do it at a Rose Bowl where he's lost as a head coach of the Oregon Ducks to Ohio State before in that 2009 season. So we are doing a best of show tomorrow on New Year's Eve. So this is our last live show of the year. So if you have a Oregon Duck prediction or thought to get off before Wednesday's kickoff, today is the day to do it at 503-417-7575. And Stephen, first time you and I have seen each other and spoken since the Christmas holiday. Ran a bunch of best of shows last week, so good to be back in the chair with you for a live show. How is your holiday weekend? I know it's very busy. You not only have Christmas, but you have a little one's birthday to navigate this time of year.
Yeah, and very hectic with the youngest. He just turned 6 on Christmas Day, the old Christmas baby. So that's not ideal, but he owns it, and we try to make it as special as we can for him. We bring birthday cake and sing happy birthday to him. So that's hectic. You're trying to maneuver that. Everyone's getting all their gifts ready, getting all their plans ready, and then it's hey, want to come to this birthday party on top of that. But no, good time. Very hectic though. Great time hanging out with family, seeing people you haven't seen for a long time. So that's always a great time. And
are you embrace the chaos, Dad? Like, are you like, hey, just give it to me and just give me a couple of things. Just give me the sports on the TV and everybody else do their thing.
No, I'm just like, you know what? I will show up at these places, but let's just not make it like overly loud, which is impossible. And it's so loud everywhere I go. I just kind of sit up and sometimes I just feel trapped. And so I get out to the I'm on the outside here. I'm in the background.
Yeah.
Floating around, blending in. But it was a good time. It was a good time. And it's just so loud. That's my criticism of holidays.
Because you're what are you, 65, 66 years old?
Yeah. It just, I don't know. Maybe, and I can't hear either. I had this hot take. The family, the cousins, they have some nieces and nephews. They're playing some musical instruments. And they're actually good at it. Like, they're good at the piano. They're good at the saxophone. But it's just so loud. I can't hear. I'm trying to talk to people. I don't like it. Live music, it can just go away. Maybe that does make me old, but I don't know.
So my wife does not like loud music either. She doesn't like loud things in general. She doesn't really want to go to a Blazer game because of that. Now, you're fine at a stadium venue, right? A sports venue.
I will say, there was a time last year where I went to a Blazer game with one of my friends, and we sat in these seats, and I don't know what it was, but it felt like the speakers were right on us, and we both were complaining the whole time about how loud it was.
Yes. And it's not just that. It churches. I mean, Christmas Eve services. They'll rip your ears off these days. It's wild. So bring earplugs if you're going outside. That is the message of the holiday season. If you're leaving the house, hell, if you're in the house, put on some earplugs. Some of those nice Max earplugs. Look, I'm a big earplug guy myself. So you're preaching to the choir when you're talking about things being loud. Earplugs, they help me focus. I don't know what it is. I think I'm addicted to listening to stuff. I've always been this way. I've always had to listen to something in my ears, even since I was like in middle school or high school. I worry for our current generation because of all the intake and stimulus they get digitally. How could they not be addicted to all these intakes as they grow older? Because I was that way and I barely had any, digitization in my home. But I'm always on my earplug. I'm always listening to something. More often than not, it's a sports podcast, a podcast of some sort, a 1993 NFL playoff game on YouTube. These are the types of things I'm listening to at any given time. I'm almost finished with Chiefs Oilers divisional playoff, by the way. That hell of a game. Hell of a game. Also, they didn't have 2-point conversions in 93. I did not know this.
You forget that, yeah.
I mean, I'm watching fourth quarter. Warren Moon scores a touchdown. And I'm like, all right, well, they'll go for two to tie it. And they kick an extra point, and the broadcasters say nothing. And there's like 3 minutes left in the game. Nothing from the broadcast. I'm like, what the hell? Why didn't they go for two? And I'm like, did they even have the 2-point conversion yet? They did not until the 94 season. I reminded myself of that today. So I'm always, always listening to something at any given moment. I figured, at some point, I got to focus on something for real. Like, I actually got to focus. I get these Mac earplugs at Fred Meyer or Walmart or wherever, and apparently they're for swimmers, Stephen. It's like for Olympic swimmers. They put them in there, so it keeps them getting swimmers' ears, apparently a thing. So those big, thick Mac earplugs, those really help me dial in and focus for those handful of things I need to dial in and focus on.
But I would have you no other way. I'd need you listening to Chiefs Oilers at Christmas Eve around your family. Like, wait, Judah, what are you doing? I'm just listening to Chiefs Oilers on YouTube. That's what I need out of you. I don't need that. I don't need to be listening to anything at all times. I can sit in quiet and just sit there and just be a crazy person.
What's the most sophisticated thing you think you do? And do you do that thing around the holiday season? I have this thing. I feel like people get extra sophisticated around the holidays. It's, all of a sudden I'm going to have a glass of cognac. Do you ever have a glass of cognac? I mean, honestly.
No,
it's just, you just feel hoity-toity because you feel around the holiday, which I'm actually not judging. I kind of like it. The holidays should feel like a special time. But I do feel like people get extra sophisticated, extra Sophie, right around the Christmas holiday, New Year season. And I'm just pointing it out. That's all.
No, I wear.
I think I might do that.
I wear like a pair of khakis. Like, that's about as,
That's about it
slacks,
for you.
A pair of slacks, yeah.
A little cup
not
of milk.
Not joggers.
little khakis while you watch some Harbaugh football.
It's about as fancy as I can get.
Which, by the way, Harbaugh khakis. I got to look at the playoff picture. Is, if the season ended today, would it be Chargers Ravens in that first round? We got to talk playoffs. So let's just dive into it. What a weekend it was for the NFL, Steven, and for football in general, because obviously we're getting hyped and we'll talk plenty of Ducks Buckeyes. But that week 17, we had a little bit of everything. The Christmas games were bizarre, but kind of cool. Did you watch the Netflix games?
Yeah, we had them on in the background a little bit. I didn't like have time to like sit down and, you know, stare at the TV and criticize every single person that was on there. But
you got Jesus's birthday and Huddy's birthday.
That's right.
It's hard to watch Ravens Texans.
I did see RG3 eat a cake really weird, which was kind of interesting.
I missed that.
Go check it out. Kay Adams gives him a look like, what are you doing? I thought it was a good showing, I thought, out of Netflix. And it made me think, like, that's going to kind of be the future, I think. Not only the NFL, but Netflix is going to get into all these live sports events. Like, we saw how it worked on the CW this, you know, last couple seasons with the Pac-12 and the ACC, and how it's been pretty successful. And now it's like, okay, that's a viable option. I think Netflix is kind of showing the same thing now. They had, you know, the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight that went pretty well, I would say, for what it was. And now the NFL had a decent showing as well. Like, I think Netflix is a real player now when it comes to live sports, and you're getting huge numbers on that platform. So I think that's just going to be a viable option now for a lot of these sports leagues.
I remember the Paul Tyson, like, people were talking about buffering and things like that being an issue. And I didn't get that same reaction at all with the Christmas game. So they must have solved that or had that ready to go. I thought it looked great. Then you had the Thursday night Prime game, which, by the way, I totally forgot there's going to be a playoff game on Prime this year. So that's coming down the pike. And Seahawks-Bears was, obviously, I'm a Seahawk fan, so I was trying to cling to any amount of playoff hope I could get. But kind of a snooze fest for the rest of the country. And then you get the Saturday games. And the first game Saturday, I mean, Herbie and the Chargers dominate the Patriots. The Bo Nix Burrow game was awesome. What a great game that was Saturday afternoon. That went to overtime and Bo leading him back, and then Burrow winning that game multiple times, including a 33-yard field goal in overtime that hits the post. Are you serious? Only for the Bengals to find a way to win in the end. And then, of course, as a Seahawks fan, I was rooting my head off for the Cardinals. I honestly thought the Rams were going to blow out the Cardinals on Saturday night. The Cardinals, I thought, were going to be kind of quitting on their season after losing in Carolina the week before. And the Rams, I thought, were going to come out flying and ready to put a stamp on the NFC West division title. And credit the Cardinal defense, and maybe I should be worried about the Ram offense a little bit going forward in the playoffs. That was a very, very close game. And obviously, as a Seahawks fan, it was particularly heartbreaking. You needed the Cardinals to beat the Rams in order to have a win in your in game against the Rams this week for the NFC West. And in the end, a ball goes off the helmet of Trey McBride at the goal line, gets intercepted by Akella Witherspoon. And even though there were some, you know, there were some strength of victory things on Sunday, that was the other thing that annoyed me. Seahawks fans all, you know, hey, we have this hope. We need the Packers. It's like, are you guys forgetting? We'll need the same 6-7 results to go our way next week, too, in order for all this to fall into place. And people were living and dying, trying not to be eliminated by week 17. I'm like, it literally will not matter. The Seahawks, once the Cardinals lost, the Seahawks season was over. And did you watch that game, Rams-Cardinals? It was kind of obviously a very low-scoring game, but in the end, particular heartbreak for the Seahawks fans with that interception in the end zone.
Yeah, tough break there. And you know, the Cardinals are one of those teams, I feel like, that can beat anybody or lose to anybody on any given day. Like, they're just so Jekyll and Hyde. And they played well. You know, they stood up to the physicality of the Rams, and they matched them, you know, like you said, with a defensive battle, and they had their chances. You know, but the Rams get in the playoffs now, win the NFC West. It makes me think, like, I kind of trust the Rams going forward with Matt Stafford and McVay. They've done it before. I asked you before the show, is McVay the best offensive mind in the NFL? I think he is. And so for that reason alone, like, you get into the playoffs and you go against that guy, I think that's a tough out for anybody to ask. So I think right now the Rams got to be feeling good just getting into the playoffs, as it didn't look like they were going to earlier this season after their atrocious start to the year. But now they're looking good. And, you know, just to get the win, I think at this point of the year, it's kind of like the NCAA tournament, survive in advance right now. And I think that's what it kind of turned out to be against the Cardinals in that game. But you do worry about the Rams. Just do they have offensive explosiveness enough to win some games? But I kind of trust them to do that. They can figure it out.
Who would your NFC pick be right now to make it to the Super Bowl?
It's tough because it's like I don't know that I trust any team like fully. Like everyone has their flaws. I don't trust the Vikings. I don't trust the Lions defense. The Packers, I think, are just a year away. Like they haven't beaten anybody really good this season. The Rams, same thing. Eagles, I guess maybe Philadelphia, but Sirianni is just kind of a joker as well. I think I would probably go Philadelphia, but I don't feel good about it at all.
Why not the Vikings? Is it just because over the years they've just given you a reason to, you know, they've fallen in the playoffs?
They've fallen short a lot. They've fallen short too many times. A
couple missed kicks along the way.
Missed kicks, just not great. You know, a couple years ago when they played the Giants at home, they got absolutely worked by the Giants in that game. Like, I the Vikings just are one of those teams that they're going to have to prove it before I trust them. It's kind of like the Lions last season, Judah, where I didn't really trust them going into the playoffs, and then they probably should have beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. That could happen this year with the Vikings, where they get to the NFC Championship game, and it's like, well, I still don't believe them until they do it. And maybe they do it because the NFC is so, you know, I don't know if there's like they're an elite team right now in the NFC, and the Vikings could be it, but I got to see them do it before I can put my trust in and say they're going to the Super Bowl.
I'm higher on the Packers than you are, and even though I was disappointed in the first three quarters of the game yesterday with Green Bay and Minnesota, but I still think the Packers have what it takes to make a deep run. I could see an NFC championship where it's two NFC North teams. I mean, that's pretty reasonable given that there's going to be three of them in the postseason. And next Sunday night, Steven, it's Vikings-Lions for the one seed. Now, people are like, oh, this is historic. And I get it. It kind of is. Same thing, 2019. Seahawks 49ers, Sunday Night Football, regular season finale in Seattle. That was for the NFC one seed. Marshawn Lynch just came back out of retirement. People remember that chaos. It was crazy. And it went all the way down to the final drive. And last play of the game, Russell Wilson throw to Jacob Hollister at the half-yard line, tackled by a rookie, Dre Greenlaw, wins the one seed for the 49ers in 2019 and keeps Seattle from winning the division in 2019. That is peak Sunday Night Football regular season finale football right there. Of course, the Niners would use that momentum to win at home two playoff games and go to Miami for Super Bowl 54. Curious to see if a similar dynamic is at play for Vikings-Lions on Sunday night. It's a really tasty Week 18 finale. Steven, what do the Lions do tonight? They got Monday night game with the 49ers. How do you think they should handle things with their starters, their impact players, knowing it's going to be a short week and they know the stakes for next Sunday night already?
I mean, based off their personality and Dan Campbell, it seems like they're going to go out and try to win. You know, they did that a couple years ago against the Packers down at up in Lambeau. They didn't have anything to play for, and they go out and they win that game so the Packers don't make the playoffs. I can't see any other way that Dan Campbell would have it besides just playing his starters balls to the wall in this one and having them out there. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's the way they're going to go about it. That's the way they go about their business. I also think they don't want to, like, you know, they already have so many injuries. Like, how much worse could it actually get? I mean, you know, they're third,
especially
and fourth
on defense.
Yeah, they're already the third and fourth string defenders.
That's
they're going
crazy.
Guys, Jamal Adams out there.
Do you think that's going to keep them from going to the Super Bowl?
I do.
That's so sad.
It is, because that defense has some talent on
it. Aaron Glenn might want to just suit up again.
He'd probably be the nickel cornerback there.
Yeah, exactly.
But the offense is definitely good enough to win. But it's, can their defense hold up for three or four straight games? So I do think it is kind of important for them to get this bye week and get the one seed and only have to play two games in the NFC to get to that Super Bowl, because that depth is lacking on the defensive side.
And on the other side, is it, I mean, I can't see anybody going into Kansas City and beating the Chiefs. I want to make the case for the Ravens. I want to make the case for the Bills. I think the Ravens probably have a better shot than Buffalo to beat the Chiefs in Kansas City. Do you agree with that, or would you lean Buffalo? Who has the better shot to beat the Chiefs in the postseason in Arrowhead Stadium here in a couple of weeks? Would it be the Ravens or the Bills?
I honestly wish one of these teams was in the NFC. Like, I wish, like, the Ravens or the Bills were in the NFC, so then they could play one of the Chiefs or the Ravens or the Bills in the Super Bowl.
You really don't think that there's an NFC champion that can compete with Kansas City?
No, not really. I think the AFC has the top three teams in the NFL.
I think that's probably right, but I wonder if we're sleeping on Minnesota.
We might be.
I mean, do we, because we just have the playoff history and the shortcomings in our head. But, you know, you mentioned that team that lost at home to the Giants a couple years ago, I should say. That was a defense run by Ed Donatell, who Pete Carroll tried to hire in Seattle before decided basically to run the defense himself with Clint Hurt. And that was a terrible, terrible Viking defense. That was one of the worst in the league. Now they're one of the best in the league.
Yeah.
With Brian Flores.
He's flipped that defense around, yeah.
And, you know, a better offense, even, I would say. This Sam Darnold offense, I think, is better than the one, even with Kirkers winning 13 games. I think this KOC, Darnold, Justin Jefferson, obviously Addison added to the mix, and Aaron Jones added to the mix. They lost a Pro Bowl left tackle in Christian Darrisaw. Lost him for the season after tearing an ACL in a Thursday night game against the Rams. The Minnesota Vikings, Steven, have lost two games all year. They came within 5 days of each other. They lost two games in less than a week and haven't lost since. And they keep winning these high leverage games late. I kind of want Minnesota to make it to the Super Bowl now and at least give themselves a shot for a Lombardi in this modern era of the NFL when, as you and I were talking about before the show, you associate the Vikings with a certain amount of playoff heartbreak over the years. And I think 98 NFC Championship is top of mind with that. But, you know, the Blair Walsh miss kick against the Seahawks in the 2015 wild card, that comes to mind, you know, as well. You think Vikings, cold weather city, cold weather team. Well, that's like the only cold weather playoff game that they've ever had at home, because they've always been a Metrodome or U.S. Bank Stadium team. But I'm trying to picture in my mind the Vikings making it to the Super Bowl, and I think I'm there. I think they could do it.
They definitely could. I mean, Justin Jefferson's the best receiver in the NFL, and Jordan Addison, as you said, has really emerged as a top option, and he's their number two option. So they got some guys on that side of the football. I think you're right now with the NFC, it's so wide open. The Vikings have as good a chance as anybody, but I do think it's important for both them and the Lions get that one seed. Yeah, if you only have to win those two games and you have them at home, that's a big home field advantage.
Who needs it more?
Vikings.
Oh.
The Vikings' home field advantage, I think, is huge. They play great there.
You mean in the actual atmosphere, the stadium?
Yeah.
You know, I think the Lions probably would need it more. I mean, the Lions, they have that kind of now, it might be a misnomer of playing outdoor games, right? They won in Green Bay, they won in Chicago, but they only had like three or four outdoor games the entire season. They'd be a 5 seed going to a 4 seed, which in this case would be probably Tampa.
I've seen it with Detroit, though. They beat Green Bay this year in Lambeau. They beat Green Bay a couple years ago in Lambeau in the cold when it didn't matter. Like, I've seen that. I think with Minnesota, I just associate them with their home field and their fans, and I think it actually is a big-time home field advantage for them. So I don't want to see Sam Darnold, you know, go on the road and have to win a big-time playoff game. I don't know if I'm there yet with him if the Vikings are going to make the Super Bowl.
Now, I still think the Chiefs probably win it all. They have just started to play their best football at the right time, getting healthier with the addition of Hollywood Brown. And they've got, by winning 3 games in 11 days after your bye week, you're set up from a physical perspective and a bye week perspective pretty darn nice. You know, you don't have to play any starters in week 18. You don't have to play in the first round of the NFL playoffs. You can sit back and game plan and scout and watch. And who's great after a bye of any sort? Andy frickin' Reid and Patrick Mahomes. I've got the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl. It's hard to imagine otherwise. But who's your pick right now at 503-417-7575? Talk a little bit more college football coming up. How Oregon is preparing for Ohio State as an underdog after going 13-0, being the number one team in the country, and Vegas thinks they'll lose. We'll talk about that more next. Judah Nubi, Stephen Vaughn, in for John Cazzano, right here on the Bald-Faced Truth in the BFT Radio Network.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Nubi, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. The Boise State-Penn State spreads like at 11? And Texas, Arizona State, where is that one at?
Last I saw it was like 12.5. It opened at like 14.5, I want to say, Texas. Oh. But Arizona State getting a little money.
Some Dillingham money. That's nice. There should be a fund where any bet that you win on Arizona State, a part of it is, you know, not the bet, but there should be an extra boost of the profit that gets donated to the NIL collective of the school that you bet on. Did I just come up with like a great idea to boost NIL? It's a profit boost, essentially, but a proceed of the profit boost goes to the NIL collective. So it earns you a 3-star recruit.
I mean, I'm down.
You bet on an underdog of 10 or more points and you win the money line. You should be able to get that profit boosted, and a part of that earns you a 3-star recruit. And you get enough 3-star recruits, you can convert it to a 5-star.
Yeah.
I think in 2030, that might be a thing. But of course, collegiate wagering will still not be legalized in Oregon by that time. Where are you leaning with your big underdogs so far as it concerns the spread, unless you're feeling frisky and feeling money line with one of these teams?
I will say I like the underdogs in every game. Every single game.
You are underdog Steven this week.
I am. It was very chalky in the first round here in the quarterfinals.
The dogs are barking.
Georgia with Gunnar Stockton, the more I think about it, the more I don't know if they're going to win that game. Yeah. I know he was fine in that comeback against Texas, but I think Notre Dame may be a team that can get to the national championship.
Yeah.
And Riley Leonard can run the football. They're not going to want to get into this, you know, a high scoring game. I don't know how much Georgia's actually going to be able to score against Notre Dame because of the quarterback situation, and the Georgia defense isn't as good as it has been. I think Notre Dame is going to win this game. Now, I think Oregon's going to win. I flip flopped on that as well from the last time we were on before Christmas. I thought Ohio State was the way. I think Oregon's the team right now. They're getting a little undervalued, which is so weird to say, being the only undefeated team left, winning all these games. But they have won every game, and we're still looking at them like, yeah, can they do it? Yeah, I think that they can. The part that gets me for Oregon right now is they have won every game, and they've won it in different facets. They've won by blowout. They've beaten good teams. They've won at the end. They've won. They've gotten lucky. They've played bad, and they've won. Ohio State has lost some of these games, and I don't know that I can trust Ryan Day. We are overvaluing them a little bit after that game against Tennessee. Like, it's a perfect mix of just everything happening at once. Last week, I overvalued Tennessee because of the way Michigan overperformed against Ohio State. So I thought Tennessee would win. Now I'm kind of going the opposite and saying, well, now we're overvaluing Ohio State because they had one really good game against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So I think Oregon's going to win. And then Arizona State, I think they can keep it close. And I think Boise State can keep it close as well. James Franklin, can't trust that guy. Sark versus, why am I blanking right now?
Dillingham,
yeah. I love Dilly. Give me some Dillingham and Cam Scadabo. They are talking like they are going to win this game.
Scadabo says he can't be stopped.
Sam Levitt said he's the better quarterback in this game. They are talking trash.
Now, is this in the Peach Bowl?
I love it. I love every second of Arizona State talking trash to Texas. And I think Texas wins the game, but I think Arizona State is going to keep this one close. Scadabo is going to go wild.
Wow, I love that. I would so much love Arizona State to win this football game for a variety of reasons, but a disappointed Sark in a big moment is near the top of that list. A couple of things out of that. Number one, if it's in Georgia, so do we have the same problem with the bovine situation with the Longhorn? Remember, he wasn't allowed inside the building for the SEC championship?
He's not allowed again.
Okay. But the Sun Devil, I'm assuming, is fine, right?
Can the devil just go where he wants anyway?
I think the devil can just show up.
I think you can tell the devil not to show up. He's going to show up
anyway. Unless God tells him not to, I think the devil will show up there, which, who knows? You know,
they outlaw him, but he just shows up anyway.
Would it be weird? Could God be a Sun Devil fan? I think if you call yourself a Sun Devil, it's hard to have God on your side in any game. So
that's tough.
You know, that's God's probably a Texas man in this situation. I don't know. That's a tough one to sort out. So, but if you can't have, you know, your mascot in there, McConaughey will be there.
Well, it's a different one between a devil and a sun devil.
That's a good question. What is a sun devil?
That's the thing. Maybe God can like a sun devil, but he can't like the
actual devil. Maybe this is more like an Egyptian god situation. Like
your friends close.
Raw.
Your enemies closer.
I love that, right? 93 million miles away. You keep that sun devil away. Like Ra was the Egyptian sun god. So maybe, you know, does he have a name? The devil mascot? The Sun Devil?
Sparky.
Oh, Sparky. Sparky is the Egyptian Sun Devil. That's what he is. He's the enemy of Ra, the sun god. He's just the Sun Devil. So it's Ra against Sparky, but Sparky can be there. So it's basically Sparky against McConaughey instead of, you know, what's the bovine? I always forget the Texas.
Bevo?
Bevo, yeah. Sparky, it's not Sparky against Bevo. That's out. It's Sparky against McConaughey. That's in. That's the overtime period I want to see. Those two going at it. That's number one. I could see Arizona State winning the game. Just in this kind of chaos and Texas is overlooking them situation.
Well, the thing about this is Texas's offense is not great. And I know they played well against Clemson, but Clemson's not great either. Like, Quinn Ewers just hasn't been great this season. And Dillingham, I feel like, is going to have something up his sleeve. Remember the Big 12 title game? They just crushed Iowa State. And Iowa State, decent little team, not great. But, I mean, it wasn't even close from the get-go.
And
Scadaboo's great.
If you're Brett Yormark, you don't want to have a, quote, decent little team in your Big 12 championship game.
You don't.
Whoops. You don't want to have a decent little... Would you call Colorado a decent little team?
Good little team.
Even after the Alamo Bowl? you know,
well, according
bowl
to
games
ESPN,
are bowl games.
According to ESPN, they're the best team of all time.
They are
and
the best
Shador
team
Sanders
of all time.
And Travis Hunter are the only good players to talk about, even though when you're down by 30.
There is something about college football, too, where a team like Arizona State, because of the unknown factor and the nobody believes in us, I feel like you can channel that dynamic a lot more in college football than you could in the NFL, where it's like, all right, who you are is eventually going to come out. You're not going to get a feisty, pesky little underdog that jumps on anybody by 14 points early and go win the Super Bowl that way. But you can get it in a Peach Bowl quarterfinal. I truly believe that. I think Texas could come out a little bit slow. Arizona State, they've got, as long as they don't commit any stupid turnovers and they're not overly hyped, right? That's probably the backside of this. If Arizona State can't handle themselves, if they can't handle the emotions or the or the pressure, the grandeur of the situation, and make a couple of sloppy mistakes and turnovers, then that'll be different. But I think offensively they're going to be good enough to make a statement early, and then it'll be a matter of can they control that, can they continue that for a 60-minute game. Steven, on the Oregon front, how much of that betting spread, that 2.5 points for Ohio State that Vegas is setting, part of that is certainly Ohio State inflation, but how much of that, if any, do you think is also, from the national standpoint, the nation doesn't trust Oregon in the biggest game quite yet? It's not that Dan Lanning can't win the big game, but I feel like from a national perspective, they've got to see Oregon win these biggest games against the biggest teams more than once, like over and over, before they start to believe in them.
I don't think that is the case at all. I don't think from a national narrative that's where people are looking at, like, Oregon can't win the big game. I think right now it's a pure power ratings from the start of the season. The start of the year, Vegas thought Ohio State was better. During the year, we saw that they thought Ohio State was better. Go back to the game at Oregon. Ohio State, 3.5-point favorite. That's more than a field goal favorite on the road at Oregon, and they won the game. So it makes sense that Ohio State is still a 2.5-point favorite over Oregon. I don't think there's any, like, conspiracy of why this is.
Basically, Oregon wins that game by one. That's the difference between the pregame point spread in Autzen and the pregame point spread in the Rose Bowl. You're giving the Ducks the point that they won by.
Because it's not as if Oregon went out and just completely dominated that game. I mean, that game could have gone either way. There was turnovers either way. You know, Ohio State turns it over, you know, on their side of the field. Oregon gets points out of it. Will Howard, if he slides a second earlier, does Ohio State get a kickoff? Do they make that field goal and win the game?
It's the pass interference, I think, that gets me.
The pass interference.
Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, that pass interference. If they don't call that, which is shocking, you know, they didn't go in Ohio State's favor.
I thought it was a good call.
I know, but usually those things go in Ohio State's favor.
That's
just
true.
Just
yeah.
Like the,
you're right about that.
What was it? In the first quarter,
yeah.
The drop pass interception.
Yeah, right? Which, unbelievable.
Which didn't get reversed. Like,
unbelievable. Not even reviewed, did it?
Not even reviewed. They just
That's
kept
bad.
Playing it on, and Ohio State scores a touchdown to start the game. There's so many different options that could have happened, so I don't think that win by Oregon was enough to, you know, tiptoe it to the other direction of saying Oregon needs to be favored over Ohio State.
Right.
And if you're based off the power ratings that they have.
And if you're, to your point, if you're setting a betting line, the point of the betting line is to get equal money, bet on both sides. It's not really necessarily hey, we think this team's going to win the game. It's that a little bit, you know, implicitly.
Because if Oregon was favored, there'd be a lot of Ohio State bets.
Way too much. I think from this is where national brands come into play, right? I mean, Ohio State is as big as a brand as you can get. Same thing would happen in Alabama. This is why when Nick Saban says who would be favored in X amount of games, it's actually not the best argument. Because when you're setting the betting line, it's to protect yourself against too much liability. It's not really putting your stake in the ground saying, I absolutely think this team is a better team. This is why bettors, when they, you know, bettors even out of Vegas, guys that run sports books, they will say, here's where I would put the betting line. I would take the underdog. You know, that it's a totally different dynamic. When Saban went out and said that, that's actually not the best argument of who should be in the playoff. Because setting lines is to get equal money bet on both sides. To keep yourself, it's to protect yourself from liability. It's not to say this is definitely a better team. I mean, it's that a little bit,
it's based
obviously.
Off of a power rating, but it
brings your brand and your reputation right. more into play than the actual right. value of your football team that year.
No, 100%. And I love the betting line. I think you can learn a lot from it, just kind of how teams are perceived. But yes,
especially in college, I think.
Yes, there are, but you have to take it with a grain of salt, and it's not the overriding thing. Like, just because one team is favored over another team doesn't mean they're better. Like, that it doesn't mean that at all. It just means that's what it is for that one day. You know, there's so many adjustments. A couple years ago when Georgia and Alabama played in the SEC title game, Alabama won that game. Going into the game, Georgia was a 7.5-point favorite. Then they play in the national championship. Georgia was a 4.5-point favorite. Just a way too big of adjustment. Georgia dominates them.
Yeah.
I think that's...
That's a good point.
Like, the same with this Oregon-Ohio State game. They didn't overreact to the Oregon win earlier this season against Ohio State, and they didn't make Oregon the favorite. They still have Ohio State as the favorite of Oregon, as it probably should be. But does that mean that Ohio State's better? No, not necessarily.
Okay, for Oregon, you got this game, and I'll ask you this on the other side as well. We'll do our big splash. But then... if Oregon wins this game, do you think we'll look back on this and say this was the toughest game of their path to win the national championship? That's what I kind of am trying to pick. I'm trying to put the whole puzzle together. And when we put the whole puzzle together, will we look back and say that Rose Bowl quarterfinal, that was the Super Bowl? Sometimes you say that in the NFL, right? The championship game was actually the Super Bowl that year, because the Super Bowl, the team from the other side, that's not a similar test, even though the stage is bigger and the lights are brighter. Will we look back on this game for Oregon, and if they win going forward, say that was their toughest test? 503-417-7575. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Cazzano. It's a best of show tomorrow on New Year's Eve. We're off Wednesday as well for the new year. And of course, Duck Buckeyes kicking off at 2:00 New Year's Day. So the next time you'll hear from us will be Thursday this week, live to react to the game. That means you get your pick in right now on the show. You can tweet at 750 the game, at Judah Newby, at Stephen_VON, and call in, of course, 503-417-7575. Big Splash and Punch It Audio still ahead of us here on the Boldface Truth.
Hi. When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
All right, hour number two of the show. Looks like Damian Martinez is going to the NFL draft. No surprise there. Brett McMurphy says there will be in-depth discussions about the college football playoff bracket next year, not guaranteeing conference champions a top four seat. top five conference champs would still get in, but the rankings would determine the seeds. Jude Anobi, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Plus, we'll talk a little Blazers this segment, going for a third straight win tonight. Joel Embiid, I mean, one of the easiest targets I feel like in sports right now, and a visiting announcer took his shot. We'll get to that in Punch It Audio. But and we'll talk more Ducks, Buckeyes, of course, and your thoughts at 503-417-7575. We have a best of show tomorrow, so get your prediction in now. I know Duck fans are kind of criticized by definitely Beaver fans and other, you know, Pac-12, Big Ten fans for either being front runners or, you know, you only win because you're Phil Knight money, et cetera, et cetera. I want Oregon to win this game. I'm not a Duck homer. I'm not a Beaver homer. I grew up rooting for both schools pretty equally. The Civil War is always my favorite day of the calendar year. The Civil Wars in, you know, 07 was an epic Civil War. The 08-09 Civil Wars with so much on the line, Rose Bowl berths on the line, pretty epic. Those are my favorite moments of the rivalry. But I want Oregon to win this, Steven. I want Oregon to win this game kind of for Oregon fans. How annoying of a take is that? I actually want Duck fans to be happy. I want Duck fans to be happy, and I want Oregon to win this game because I've seen them lose this game before, and I'd rather talk about the Ducks continuing this magical run at 14-0 with two wins over Chip and Ohio State and keep this playoff thing going. I don't want to come back on Thursday and say it was another Rose Bowl and Oregon lost to Ohio State.
Well, you ask a question like, who's more annoying than Duck fans? It's Ohio State fans. So I mean, like, that's kind of your answer. Like, I actually, you know, I feel like it's kind of funny when the Ducks lose, their fans just jump off the edge. Like, it's the worst thing of all time, and they need to fire everybody. But Ohio State's even worse. So I'm with you. I want the Ducks to win this game, which is weird as a non-Duck fan and more of a Beaver fan than a Duck fan.
Like, what do you find most enjoyable about this Oregon team this year?
Dan Lanning, for sure. I find him refreshing. I find him funny. I find him very engaging when he's on the show with John. I love his gambling mindset that he has. Like, he's going to go for it on fourth down. He doesn't care what you think. I love that about him.
Also, gambling mindset. I'm going to cover the spread for my boosters.
Hey.
I don't care what you think.
Yeah, I'm going to be mad at Jonathan Smith when he's kicking field goals and cover their spread for Michigan State. No, I love Dan Lanning. I think he's a great coach. He's still figuring out. He's still so young. The fact that he's had all these opportunities to, you know, apparently move to different type of coaching jobs, and he's like, no, dude, I'm not leaving. I never was going to leave.
And, I mean, he was in Tuscaloosa last year interviewing for the job, as we found
out.
But
it's just the way that
happened in 2024.
The way he's captured the fan base, I think, is great. Now, I do think it's kind of silly to go back and listen to his pregame talk against Colorado, that they play for clicks and we play on the grass when, you know, they're putting out everything for clicks all the time. And, you know, you can kind of go against that kind of stuff. But I love Dan Lane. I love his mindset and love the way he goes about his business with Oregon. Like, it's great.
They're playing for clicks. We're playing for wins as we float down our inflatable duck.
Yeah, like, I mean, that stuff is kind of silly, but
the duck versus them stuff.
I think Dan Lanning's awesome. I love that guy, and it's not even just for me. Like, there, you know, I was talking to, you know, around Christmas time, you're hanging out with your family, and my mother-in-law, she doesn't even watch football. She says, I started watching the Ducks, and I love Dan Lanning. Like, he's caught people's attention.
That's the next level tier of audience and attention. You said your mom is into it now? Your mother-in-law? Okay, and she's not a football fan?
No.
She knows of Dan Lanning?
Yeah, she knows.
And is watching that.
And loves Dan Lanning. Like, he's caught the attention of the state of Oregon.
He is in the cultural milieu now, at least in the state, and I think it's only going to get bigger for him. Where do you think he goes? Let's go big picture with Dan. Where do you think he goes after Oregon? Because there will be a time after Oregon. When that time will be, probably won't be anytime soon, which is great for Oregon. But, you know, part of my going down the YouTube rabbit hole and watching all these old NFL playoff games and things like that, it kind of puts into perspective, wow, you live long enough, and obviously most of our listeners have lived longer lives than I. You see a lot of different coaches and different iterations of themselves at different stopping points, and some roles in some leagues, some styles fit them differently. I can't see Dan Lanning being in a better fit and a better job than the one that he currently has. I can't. However, I know these are not lifelong gigs, you know, by and large, most of the time, unless he goes on a Nick Saban type of run. And be mindful, Nick Saban's last job was Alabama. Think of how many coaching lives he lived before Alabama. You wouldn't have necessarily placed him at Alabama winning multiple, what did he win, six national championships in one
especially
place?
Especially as he won a national title at LSU.
In 2003, exactly.
Michigan State.
What do you think is next for Dan Lanning?
I don't think it's a college job, honestly. I think it's the NFL. I think it's the Chiefs' job makes so much sense. I don't know if that's going to be the job or not because he was a Kansas City Chiefs fan growing up. And we've talked about he doesn't have that school that he went to, the alumni, that is going to go out and get him, obviously. So the Chiefs' job makes a lot of sense, but I think it's an NFL job somewhere. Like, they're going to just pony up the Brinks truck for him. And I don't know when it's going to be, but I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be for a while, but we still don't know what the landscape of college football is going to be. Like, it's still up in the air what this sport's going to look like in next season or in 2 years or 5 years. So
yeah.
I don't think, I'm with you, I don't think he's there forever. And I do think it's interesting that there are some comments coming about and saying, you know, he even admitted, like, yeah, my dream at one point was to coach in the NFL. So I think that's the job that could entice him to leave. But I think he has so much stuff he wants to do at Oregon that he's nowhere close to looking to leave this job. Like, I think there's so many things he has on his goals down in Eugene to do before he heads to you know, a different type of job.
I think of, you know, what kind of coach would he be like? You know, people throw out the Dan Campbell stuff, and I was like, that's not it. That's not it. I mean, you say it's he's a motivator in the same way. You think that Gladiator movie clips will work with the Detroit Lions locker room? Like, you know, that, we're not talking about the same thing. We're talking about a Dan Campbell who played with multiple NFL teams over damn near a decade, multiple playoff games. He literally knows what it's like to be day in, day out in an NFL locker room. That's why he works as a master motivator, not because he knows how to go viral, right? Not saying that that's Dan's only trick. He obviously knows how to relate to kids, recruit them. I think the development has been very good. I think Dan can lead a staff impeccably, and he knows how to acquire talent in this day and age of college football. The NFL, obviously, not even close to college football in terms of the talent acquisition, building a roster. You can't get more fluid than college football. In the NFL, you don't have similar pathways. In fact, far from it. But to your point, I think, you know, what was Jimmy Johnson's kind of trajectory? I mean, he obviously had a college background. He knew everyone. And he was part motivator, part mind, and it worked. He came to, you know, Dallas at just the right time when it made sense, it fit, and he kind of took the Cowboys to that next level. It took him a little bit, but he got him there, and obviously they became the Cowboys of the early 90s. And I think something like that could be in play possibly for Dan Lanning, but if you're saying it's the Chiefs' job, that would be an organization, you know, frankly, that would be so used to winning, I don't think people would have patience for a homeboy homecoming type of deal just because he was a Derek Thomas fan.
Yeah. No, it makes tons of sense.
We're talking 7-8 years down the road. Probably 10 years. Because what did he say? He said, look, my kids are going to come through. I can't remember how old his youngest kid is, but get the youngest kid through high school. Then we'll think about the next thing.
I mean, and he seems to truly love Eugene. Like, that's the thing is, when Cristobal and Willie Taggart were here spewing their things, it didn't seem as if, like, yeah. Like
when Chip was here.
Like, this is the ideal spot for me. Like, yeah, this is where I want to end up. Like, Dan Lanning has made it clear since day one, like, he's so appreciative that Oregon gave him this chance as his first head coaching job. I think that's a different type of thing as well.
Bilotti was the last one that felt that way.
Yeah.
Where he felt like he truly, and Bilotti was obviously different because he was here forever and built the thing after Rich. Chip didn't feel that way, you know. Mark, kind of, I guess, Helfrich, you know.
Helfrich would have been. He would have been a lifer if he had the choice.
That's the weird thing about it. Like, on paper, Helfrich made a lot of sense. The Coos Bay kid, the Chip system and all that. Got Mariota from Hawaii, QB recruiter, developer. But sometimes the fit that makes sense on paper doesn't make sense in reality. We ended up finding that out with Mark Helfrich. Then once you got to Willie, you know, there was no loyalty to be had there. And credit to Rob Mullins and whatever, you know, the search firms. Mullins and the search firms have gone from Slick Wills to Mario and Dan Lanning and got progressively better with each hire. In this day and age of college football, that's really hard to do. But he did exactly that. And now the future is certainly bright for Oregon, but Dan's not going to leave anytime soon. But with all my kind of reminiscing on coaches and the NFL and college football, I'm just trying to think in my head, you know, when I'm, you know, 7 to 10 years older now, I'm 32 now, when I'm in my 40s, where is Dan Lanning going to be coaching? And it's probably an NFL job. I think the Chiefs would be fun for the theme. of it all, depending on how long Andy Reid wants to go. But I think there will probably be an NFL job waiting for him at some point. Do you think Deion goes to the NFL anytime soon? People are trying to shove him out the door. Colorado. It's crazy how much we just want him to leave Colorado already.
Yeah, I could see it soon. I don't think it's going to be this season. I think he's back at Colorado next year. But, I mean, any another year or two, yeah, I could see him leaving or just doing something different because I think he does want to do something different. But I don't know about it this year. I think right now he's got a lot of momentum right now at Colorado. And so I do think that he's going to hold on to it for at least one more year.
Meanwhile, the Giants had the number one pick going into the weekend, Stephen. They beat the Colts and slip out of the number one pick. I was kind of putting Shedeur Sanders already to the New York Giants in my head, but doesn't look like I'll have to do that quite yet.
No, now it looks like the Patriots are going to be getting the first pick in the draft as long as they can lose next week. And I will say I was happy about it because I'm a guy that as a gambler as I am, I had made a bet on Travis Hunter to be the number one overall pick a while ago, 25-1. He wasn't going to go number one to the Giants. He wasn't going to go number one to the Raiders. He might go number one to the Patriots. The Patriots don't need a quarterback. They love Drake May. Drake May has shown some type of life at the quarterback position for the Patriots. The Patriots are definitely lacking at skill positions. They're definitely lacking at the cornerback position. You think you put Travis Hunter across from Christian Gonzalez? That's a good little cornerback crew that you got going on
there.
Really
good. Really good.
And I think that's where you're looking right now. And they have no good receivers. Like, he can fit in. He can play both sides of the ball. That's what he wants to do. That he has made it clear that's what he wants to do in the NFL. The Patriots can provide that for him. I think right now it does put Travis Hunter in play for the number one overall pick. Now, does someone want to move up and draft Cam Ward or draft Shedeur Sanders as the number one overall pick? Judah, I don't know about you. I don't feel like either one of those guys are number one worthy as a quarterback. Like, yeah, they'd play the most important position, and that's quarterback in the NFL. But I don't know that they're like worthy of being to move up to go get Shedeur Sanders or to go get Cam Ward. This feels like if you're going last season's draft. They're drafted after Michael Penix Jr., and that was the number eight pick in the draft. Like, I think Penix is a better prospect than both Shedeur and Cam Ward.
You would put them over Bo Nix?
Probably, yeah. I think going into last season's draft.
J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah, it's right around there. Like,
so you'd slide them right between Penix, McCarthy.
It's right around Penix, Nix,
after
McCarthy.
Penix, before Nix, probably.
Right. I would have Penix above Nix, and I think it's right around Nix McCarthy era or landing spot, and I think that's a little high to just be moving up in the draft. So I think right now, if you're Travis Hunter, you're loving what happened with the Patriots winning or losing that game and the Colts losing to the Giants. Now you might be ending up in New England and be able to play both sides of the ball and be the main guy.
Patriots with the current number one overall pick, Titans 2, Browns 3, Giants 4.
If the Giants win this week, also, Judah, did you see this? They have the potential to move up to number 10.
That'd be great.
So in 2 weeks, they could have gone from the number one overall pick to the number 10 pick, which would be insane. And then, I mean, what if we talk about
who do the Giants play?
We talk about bad franchises, though, and the Blazers are up there. The Giants, man. Ever since Tom Coughlin left, they won the Super Bowls. They have been a loser franchise.
You know what's funny about that? Who else do you think would be next to the Giants in terms of dysfunction and pain and misery with no way out?
Well, the Jets.
Exactly. The Jets and the Giants, they're laughing stocks. All the stuff that's been coming out with the Jets in the last week or two with Woody Johnson, like stuff that we probably knew in the background, but to see people talk about it outright. Aaron Rodgers to pretty much blast Woody Johnson after like a month ago. He was like, yeah, Woody called me. He calls me all the time about Robert. This is what you get for firing a pretty decent coach in Robert Saleh, you idiots. The Jets are a bunch of idiots from the top on down, and it's all coming out now. You know, I credited the Rodgers trade at the time because I like teams that ante up, but I love to see it burn. I love to see it burn and come burn into the ground as well, and that's what's happening with the New York Jets at this time. Jets play the Dolphins on Sunday, and who do the Giants play? They're at Philly. Now, Philly is only a -3 because they're not playing for anything. The only thing that they could have at stake is Saquon trying to chase down Eric Dickerson. Saquon needs what, Steven? 102 yards? To beat Dickerson's single-season rushing record?
That doesn't seem worth it, does it? To throw him out there and put more tread on those tires to say, yeah, just break this record?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
Probably not worth it. Probably not worth it. Saquon, it's probably up to Saquon, right? I mean, Sirianni, I remember that clip went out there. Sirianni went to Saquon. They were playing the Giants in New York, and he said, hey, you're only like 33 yards away from your career high. Do you want to go back in the game? It was a blowout game. They were killing the Giants. Obviously, it was a homecoming for Saquon. And Saquon said, no, let the young guys eat. Let the young guys eat. Let the young guys get in there. Get their. I don't need to get my career rushing record in this building. It's okay, but thank you. I think Sirianni would probably go to Saquon again and be like, hey, do you want to break Dickerson's record? And everybody's going to say, oh, it's 17 games to 16 games. That's true, but he's going to be doing it in what? He's got, I think, 40 or 50 fewer carries than Eric Dickerson in a 16-game season. And Barkley will get an extra game, but not nearly the amount of carries that Dickerson had. So I want him to play. I want him to break the record. I think Saquon's a fantastic player, an awesome player. I think Eagles could definitely make it back to the Super Bowl with this Vic Fangio defense. They look great. And a Philly-KC rematch, you'd get the Andy Reid Philly, you know, game once again, the what we just got 2 years ago, except we'd get it on a decent field this time because it's indoors on turf in New Orleans. I think Chiefs-Eagles would be a lot of fun. Now, I'm personally rooting for Minnesota to get there. That's kind of my team I'm hitching to now that the Seahawks are sadly out, but I think Chiefs-Eagles rematch would be a lot of fun as well, Stephen.
No, yeah, I think that the NFC, like we've talked about it, there's so many different options you can go with. Do you want to go with a rematch, like you said, of the Chiefs and the Eagles going forward? Do you want to get the Lions in there, you know, trying to have an offensive battle? But the Chiefs aren't an offensive team this season. So I think that would be a really interesting style of game with the Lions being all offense and the Chiefs being all defense. Chiefs are one of like four teams that haven't scored 30 points this season, Judah, and they are awesome this season. So
have they really?
Yeah.
No, didn't they get 30 on the Texans?
They might have. That might have been their first game. But before that game, let me go back and find
I think you're
stat.
Right, though. Yeah. I mean, not in Carolina. They scored like 20-some or whatever. You're right. You're right. They I can't remember.
I have to find this stat. I have it written down here. Stalling. But yeah, I think go look to see if they did score. Yeah, so four teams had not scored 30 points in a game. I think the Chiefs did score 30 against the Texans. And
you're right. They scored 27.
The teams are the New England.
They scored 30 at Carolina and beat them 30-27.
So they scored 30 one time. The other teams that haven't scored 30 points, the Patriots, the Giants, the Raiders, and the Kansas City Chiefs.
And the Chiefs scored 30 in an overtime win over Tampa Bay. They haven't scored over 30 all year.
Right. Haven't scored over 30 all season, and the other teams are the Patriots, Giants, Raiders. Haven't scored over 30. Yet the Chiefs have one loss on the season. Like, they're all defense.
Let me push back on that a little bit, and I only do that because of this. We do kind of put teams in these boxes. Here's what they've done all season. But if you look at the last three games, the way that Chief offense has looked in the last three games is noticeably better than the way they looked in the previous 13. Hollywood Brown, he's not like this game-changing wrecker, but he makes Xavier Worthy's job easier. Travis Kelce, late in the season, you start to see those little vibes. Mahomes, it's unbelievable. He's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Noah Gray, you know, all these pieces work. And the really thing that put it all together is they moved Joe Tooney, a lifelong guard, to left freaking tackle because their left tackles couldn't block anybody. They moved Tooney to left tackle, and that's really worked. He's been more than serviceable there, and everybody else has kind of stepped in around that. My point being, the reason I'm so confident with the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl right now is because that offense is they're starting to click into gear from a down-in, down-out basis. It's no longer, oh, a two-yard run, a one-yard run. Mahomes, save us on 3rd and 7. It's now we're getting first down after first down. We're converting 2nd and 3s. We're converting 3rd and 1s. And it's just like, oh my goodness, I think they're starting to find their gear at the right time.
Well, and that's the problem is even when it was, hey, Mahomes, save us on 3rd and 7, he would.
He could do that.
He would do it.
That's how you get
time.
15-1.
Whether it's either by him scrambling out of the pocket on a bad ankle or he's passing downfield to no names, Justin Watson or whoever he's throwing to.
Exactly.
Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, it didn't matter. He's still going to convert it. So that's the ultimate is we have Patrick Mahomes and you don't. So, yeah, you can never count the Chiefs out even if their offense isn't as good as it has been in the past, but that defense is so elite with Spagnuolo, man. He's going to dial it up every single week and have a great game plan. We saw what they did to the Ravens in the AFC Championship game. Like, they just stifled them. And so I have a lot of, you have all the confidence in the world in the Chiefs to at least get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl.
That is Stephen Vaughn. I'm Jude Anubi. And for John Canzano, we'll have a best of show tomorrow on New Year's Eve. And we're going to go really hard on that show with the best sound that John has had with his interviews with Dan Lanning and Rob Mullins. And all the Oregon folks, plus a couple of year in review pieces, the passing of Brian Wheeler, some of our reaction to that, the Heisman Trophy reaction, that will be in there as well. But it'll be predominantly Duck themed tomorrow on the best of, with a lot of Dan Lanning and Rob Mullins sound. That is part of the lead up to Wednesday's Rose Bowl quarterfinal. The Ducks, 2.5-point underdogs to the Buckeyes. Get your pick in now at 503-417-7575. Steven and I are both picking Oregon. I've got Oregon in a close game. I've got 27-24. Steven, do you have a score on that one quite yet?
No, haven't really got a score, but I think you're right around there. 27-24, just like the first game, is what, 31-30?
It could be even a higher score than that. It could be like 38-35.
I think it's right around high 20s, low 30s.
Yeah, it should be a really, really good game. And I want Oregon to win for the sake of Oregon fans. As crazy as that sounds, I want Oregon fans to be happy on Thursday morning.
And I want Oregon to win because I don't like Ohio State fans.
That too. You know, there's something to be said for that. Let's keep this playoff run going to the Cotton Bowl next week. 503-417-7575. We'll play Punch It Audio coming up next here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, the Blazers go for a third straight win tonight at Moda Center against the Philadelphia 76ers. A little 77 NBA Finals rematch. No love lost when these two teams get together, these bitter rivals.
Throw out the record books.
But seriously, it's a 6.5-point spread favoring Philly. Is Joel Embiid playing in this game, Steven?
As far as I know, yes, but I have not confirmed that yet.
Okay. But you just put in Joel Embiid in the news search, and this guy's in the headlines every day for one thing or another, Steven. He's punished by the NBA $75,000 for obscene gestures at fans. He showed up an official right the other day, the gal that ejected him. He slipped on cords in pregame warmups the other night and still played in the game. Like, that was the Christmas game, I think. And so, yeah. I mean, if it's not one thing, it's another with this guy. Is he entering a certain territory of annoyance, or do you think this is just, hey, when you're this good for this long and you're in the a market like Philly, you're going to have people turn on you?
I think it's a little bit of both. That's kind of a cop-out answer, but I do think it's a little of both. Like, I think being in Philadelphia doesn't help, and it also doesn't help that he hasn't got to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they've had games that they should win, and they should get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they don't, and he's shown up very small. And now, you know, he's always claiming to be MVP and the best player in the league, yet he's not the one that's out there playing. He plays a real rough style of basketball that's hard to watch sometimes. Like, we talk about how he hates three-pointers, but Joel Embiid gets to the basket, he goes inside, he draws fouls because it's terrible, because he's going to flop all over the court, he's going to get foul calls. It's not a very fun brand of basketball. So I think there's a lot of things going against Joel Embiid. I think he's a great player. He's an elite player when he's healthy, when he's playing, but he just can't stay healthy. And so it's tough for him. He's not going to be able to do anything right until he gets to an NBA Finals or an Eastern Conference Finals. No one's going to give him the benefit of the doubt, because we've given him the benefit of the doubt for so many years.
He even has visiting announcers getting on him. Now, keep in mind, you got this cut in the hopper here. The Timberwolves were not even playing the Sixers.
No, they weren't even playing the Sixers. Now they're playing the Spurs, and they were talking about Joel Embiid getting kicked out, and that was against the Spurs. So it kind of correlates, but yeah, the Sixers weren't even playing in this game.
Timberwolves announcer Jim Peterson in a Timberwolves-Spurs game rips Joel Embiid. Let's hear it.
Joel Embiid, who
they both was, had exchanges.
They both had exchanges, but Embiid got tossed
right
for complaining about a flop that Wemby went through. And I was like, there's so much that bothers me about this video. First of all, he got really angry. I wish he'd be as angry about not playing games as he is about a call that a referee made. The second part of it is that, I mean, he's the ultimate flopper. Is there a worse flopper in the game than Joel Embiid? That dude gets so many calls. And for him to be that angry about a flop, he's got a lot of nerve.
When I saw the clip, Steven, I was also pretty shocked that Joel Embiid was that angry and that upset for that moment when he got tossed. That was weird to me. I think this take is a little bit forced as well from the Timberwolves announcer. He just obviously doesn't like Embiid. Is Embiid considered the biggest flopper in the league, Steven? I mean,
he is.
On my flop index, I've kind of, you know, I've lost interest in the flop index, but is he among the floppiest?
I would say he is the floppiest of all the floppers.
He's the floppy disk of the NBA.
Whoa, be careful there.
Woo.
But yes, I would
bulging
say,
disc.
Yeah, the old
Steve Levy.
That's good. Now I will say Joel Embiid has absolutely dominated the Minnesota Timberwolves in his career. That could be a thing as well, where they don't like him because he dominates him in his career in 13 games, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. Awesome. You know, great field goal percentage against the Timberwolves. So there could be another factor there as well. But
probably.
Yeah, I think it's just he is very unlikable right now because he hasn't won on the biggest stage, yet he's going to complain all the time and get a lot of superstar calls. That is just where he's falling on the ground. He's the biggest guy on the court, and he's the one that's creating all the contact. Then he's going to fall on the ground. It's very James Harden-like. When James Harden was at his peak powers, and he was drawing fouls, you know, what seemed like every single play down low, you know, as he's getting a layup, that's what Joel Embiid is doing, only he's doing it in a slower, more methodical way, and he's also bigger and taller and stronger than everybody else, yet he's still going to get every foul call.
So, Sixers, Blazers tonight, and how about them Zers, Stephen? Nate Bjorkgren is the interim head coach for Chauncey Billups right now. Chauncey, you know, thoughts with Chauncey and his family following the passing of his grandmother, missed two games, missed the Greg Oden return game, so Nate Bjorkgren was filling in. Couple of Blazer dubs, a Scoot Henderson game winner to top Utah, and then they beat a Dallas team sans Luka. And Nate Bjorkgren talked about what he liked from the win over Dallas.
I like the way that we started the game. I like the way that we finished the game. And we finished the game with, you know, a different combination of players, you know, tonight than we did in our last game against Utah. I thought our team was extremely connected. You know, we had four guys score 20 points. Our point guards had 14 or 15 assists combined between them. There's a lot to like about that one.
Tip off in about 2.5 hours. How about them Zers, Steven?
Yeah, and here's the thing is Chauncey Billups gets a lot of hate, and it's deservedly so as a head coach. We don't know if he's a good coach. This team stinks. They aren't expected to win. But now Nate Bjorkgren's coming in, and he's doing things a little bit differently. And he mentioned that in that clip, Judah. That's why I like that clip. He said, we finished the game out with different lineups. In the two games that they've won with under Bjorkgren, they've had different closing lineups. It's not just, hey, we're going to go with the vets. We're going to go with DeAndre Ayton. We're going with Anthony Simons. We're going with Jeremy Grant. No, he's going with who's playing well that night. And I think that is one of the big criticisms of Chauncey is that he's so reliant on Anthony Simons or Jeremy Grant that he's going to put them out there no matter what. That's one of the bigger critiques I see out of fans is he falls in love with these guys and he just won't go away.
How much of that is politics of
the
NBA?
I think a lot of it is, but that's why Chauncey also is a very well-liked coach by the players. Like, I think he's a very player-friendly coach. And
he gets it. He played. He's a Hall of Famer.
Right, and that's why I do think Chauncey will get another job at some point when he gets fired by the Blazers or he gets let go or doesn't get his contract renewed. He'll get another chance. But with Coach Nate, he's like, look, I'm the assistant. I'm running it my way, and I'm going to play guys that are playing well. The first game they won when Scoot hit the shot, you know, Anthony Simons wasn't in the game. And that's the guy that usually gets the ball at the end of clutch time situations.
He just had a game winner.
He did.
A couple games before
and
that.
He was not on the floor. It was Scoot Henderson who had the ball the entire time. Scoot even said after the game, look, this was great. I want the ball. I don't want to stand in the corner. I don't know if that was a shot at Chauncey Billups by saying, look, you're just putting me in the corner and not letting me do anything.
Yeah.
But Coach Nate has let it where it be, if you're playing well that night, you're finishing the game. And that's happened the last two games, and they've both been wins. So now I do see some fans saying, well, he needs to be the head coach right now. Get rid of Chauncey, get Nate in there. let it happen. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't think that will happen because Chauncey, he's a lame duck coach right now. We all knew this going into the season. But there are some things that he's done that is different than Chauncey these last two games that make you think, like, man, maybe if they they did get an elite coach that doesn't care about the politics, doesn't care about if you're a vet or a rookie or whatever, is the Blazers team better than we actually think they might be?
So I got a couple questions for you out of that. And one of them is, I had to chuckle because I also read a quote from Coach Nate. I'm just going to call him Coach Nate for now. Where he said, hey, I was actually just doing the same thing that Coach Billups would do. And I was like, LOL. I LOL'd in my head because of what you just said. You literally didn't do what Coach Billups has been doing. Obviously, Coach Nate, he's not going to rock the boat like that. But you're pointing to a very critical difference in crunch time late in games that Coach Nate did that Billups did not do. And it's led to a couple of Blazer victories. But I like Coach Nate, you know, showing a little deference. Hey, so just doing the same thing. Chauncey would have done the same thing. Well, actually, Coach Nate, he wouldn't have. And I know you won't say that, but
and that's the
props
politics
to you.
Of the coaching game as well.
Yeah, but I'm also, it shows a little character, I think, for him. I would say a little bit. Like,
it
I want that.
That's hard to do.
Like, leave that for us to get to that conclusion. You don't have to tell us that, and it's fine.
When Anthony Simons is making a $100 million contract, it's hard to put him on the bench and put a rookie rookie contract Scoot Henderson out there to take the game winning shot. That's hard to do, especially when Simons has hit so many clutch shots. I mean, think about that. He's hit step backs against Memphis. He just had a game winning shot he had the layup. I'm blanking on who they played, but he had the game winning layup. He had the night, a couple nights before. It's hard to just bench those guys at the end of games. I know fans think it's just so easy. Like
Denver.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. Went right around Aaron Gordon and then shot over Jokic. Terrible defense, by the way. I told Coach Vaughn that was one of the worst defensive possessions I've ever seen at the end of the game by Denver. But fans think it's so easy just to bench these guys. It's a lot different than that because you need buy-in from your top paid guys. And Coach Nate just said, look, man, we're rolling with who's playing well. And Jeremy Grant that got benched a few times, for a little bit in the fourth quarter as well. Like, he's not just relying on the vets of going out there. And that's something that Chauncey will fall back on. And that's why I also think Chauncey can be successful and we'll get another chance when he was pursued by Phoenix because they have a lot of vets. They have Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant. He's going to lean on those guys and say, look, these are the guys. These are the guys that are playing. We're going to buy in from them. That's why Chauncey will get another shot in the NBA, where Coach Nate's just making a move right now.
That's why you're totally right. It's not a good fit. If you want this Blazer team, this current roster, this current version to maximize their potential, you need an untraditional coach.
And Chauncey's not the guy. Chauncey wasn't hired
Chauncey
for this
is
roster.
A traditional coach, right? He's young and he's still new to it, but he's still out of that traditional melt.
That's the thing is Chauncey, when he was hired, was to coach Damian Lillard and that team that was trying to contend, trying to make the playoffs. He didn't get hired for this job. Now he was going to be hired anyways because Neil O'Shea's his boy, but that wasn't the roster he was dealt. And now he's been dealt this roster where this isn't his strong suit. And I think the fact that people still love him in the Blazers organization, the players do. Like, I haven't heard anything bad with the Blazers talking about Chauncey.
Yeah.
And I hear players don't like each other. There's beef within the team sometimes. But it's never about Chauncey. And so I do think Chauncey has such a good reputation. He's going to get another shot. It's just this roster is a terrible fit for him.
Question number two for you. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about Scoot and kind of giving up hope on, all right, he's going to be a superstar player. Now, that's an early conclusion to make. I get it for a really young player. But, Steven, in the last couple of weeks, the last few games in particular, and, of course, the game winner is part of that, it's hard not to like what you're seeing out of the development of one Scoot Henderson. How do you feel about it?
I tell you what, Judah, he gets me every time. Every single time Scoot Henderson does this to me, man, he pulls me back in. I thought I was out. He pulls me back in. This is like
like me and Seahawks playoff chances.
I try to separate myself as being like fan as I used to work for the team and like evaluating these players. Scoot is like the one guy, Judah, I cannot quit. And I think, like, I love that guy. I love the way he plays hard every night. He has so many flaws right now with his game, but he plays well when he's hitting a jump shot. He can catch the catch and shoot threes he can make. That helps his game out so much when he can make a catch and shoot three to start the game. And he's done that last couple of games. I still think Scoot's fine. I don't know that he's ever going to be the star that we expected him to be, but he's going to be a good time, big time player and at least a good NBA role player because he does play so hard. So I think that's the floor is a lot higher maybe than I thought because I don't think he's ever going to be just some type of bust. He'll be in the league for a long time because he's very athletic and he cares and tries hard, which a lot of these NBA players don't.
So he could be a 1B to Shaden Sharpe for a 7 to 10 year run.
He could be.
Well, it's the NBA. Let's call it a 4 to 5 year run.
He also could be a really good sixth man coming off the bench for a Blazers team.
I'd take that. I'd take that.
Yeah.
You know, that means you're probably a playoff team.
It's not the worst thing.
Some things.
It's not the worst thing to have him be a change of pace point guard coming in and just say, I'm going to attack every time. That is valuable in the NBA. He may not be that star, but he has a spot in the NBA. I think that's for sure.
Question number three for you is more kind of big picture with this team. If you look at their record, it's 11-20. We obviously don't expect much from them. They're going to go to the lottery once again. Their record at home, though, is above 500 with these two wins over Utah and Dallas. It's 8-7. They obviously have Philly tonight. Now a big road trip coming up. Is there anything to be said for finishing above 500 at home this year? Do you think that is a reasonable goal, worthwhile goal, even if it's just for the fans? At the end of it, yeah, the Blazers weren't very good. They didn't matter. They weren't in a race for the play-in game. But hey, they were 500 at home. Is that even attainable with this team, given that they're +1 right now at home this year? They're 8-7 at Moda Center. Do you think they have that in them? And maybe if they are 500 at home, hell, maybe they are in a play-in race. I don't know. I wouldn't think so. I think you got to be a lot better than that in your home game. I still think you're lottery bound, even if you're 500 at home. But do you think going, 500 in your home games is a worthwhile goal and expectation? Not even expectation, but a goal to reach for this team, given that they're 8-7 right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be great for the Blazers and the fans. I don't think that the front office necessarily would want that, because I don't think their goal is to win this season. So if they did,
but it seems like tanking is less of a goal this year than it was in the last 2 years, right?
Well,
maybe that's just going to happen because you have more talent.
Yeah, we're early on in the season still.
We are.
We're not even halfway through the year. So teams don't tank this early into the season. Even teams that are really bad, they don't full out tank right now. Even the Wembanyama draft class. Like, that was the year everyone thought, oh, from day one, teams are going to be tanking. That didn't really happen. Teams are still playing, up until, 3/4 of the season. Then the last fourth of the season, it's all tank. I think that could happen again. I don't think the Blazers get to 500, but if they did, like, that would be a good sign. And it just says, look, man, this young core actually has something in it, and we can build from that. You got to figure it out. That is one thing they don't know. They got to figure out who's on this roster going forward, and hopefully everyone can stay healthy enough where they can figure out, okay, this guy works well with this guy's out of the picture type of thing. So yeah, I mean, I think I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it would be a goal that a Blazer fan could have.
Blazers, Sixers tonight, 7 o'clock at Moda Center. Then it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the road, beginning at the Lakers January 2nd. Lakers pulled off a pretty sizable trade. D'Angelo Russell back to Brooklyn. Lakers sent him and a handful of second-round picks back to the Nets and got Dorian Finney-Smith and some other guys. Good move for the Lakers.
It's a win-now move for sure. Dorian Finney-Smith is one of the best 3-and-D guys. Plays good defense. He's shooting a career-high 3-point percentage. He's a guy you want with LeBron, because LeBron's going to penetrate and kick out to shooters. So, and he's not going to play defense either. LeBron's not... LeBron's not a good defender anymore. He's old. He's 39. He's 40 now. Like, you can't be a good defender. But Dorian Finney-Smith is a good defender. So him and AD get it. I think it's a guy that JJ Redick would really like, because he's a guy that's defensive versatility. And I think that's what he fits with the Lakers.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Tez Johnson, Cam Scatabo, and Josh Pate, among others. Talk some more football on the other side. Plus the 5 at 5 to kick off the final hour for us of the new year. We'll have a best of show New Year's Eve tomorrow with John's top conversations with Rob Mullins, Dan Lanning, and others leading up to Oregon, Ohio State on Wednesday. This is Judah Dewey, Stephen Vaughn in for Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Hi, I'm
Now Taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had 3 jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We'll be right back.
matter. Like I said, nobody believed us in us in the first place. Why believe them now? So, I mean, we don't care. Underdogs, number one, it doesn't matter. We go 1-0 each week. So, yeah.
I'm in one of the four biggest conferences in the country. And I'm doing it at the highest level. It's simple. I believe that I'm the best because I always think I'm the best. I'm going to continue to think I'm the best. Even if I'm a third string in the NFL or a starter, I'm going to still think I'm the best in the league. Just because that's who I am and that's what I believe in. And if you have that mindset, you never know where you can end up. So, I constantly preach that to myself, you know, and, you know, obviously you've seen it the last, my stats have been what they have been. But if you really watch the tape, it's different. And then also I've missed a football game this season. Imagine if I didn't miss the football game, you know, imagine if I didn't have an injury that caused me to miss a football game. It could be a completely different story.
That's Cam Scatabo of Arizona State. The first clip, Tez Johnson of the Ducks saying, hey, no one believed in us up to this point. So why would we care that we're underdogs right now, Steven? Those are a couple of guys. And that is one thing about college football and the playoff. You know, we talk so much about teams and brands and coaches. The most enjoyable part for me is probably the individual players on the field that get to make up the stories for this playoff. It's guys like Cam Scatabo who became a major college football story this year. Guys like Tez Johnson who has been part of the college football story all season long. Guys like the talent of a Jeremiah Smith who is an incredible talent at wide receiver. That's been so much fun. Guys like Jeffrey Bosa, more of a role player, but a green dot in the middle of a defense to make those calls and be a on-field and off-field leader who has lived and breathed Oregon Duck football and his time in Eugene. It's the players on the field that are probably the most enjoyable part for me as a football fan to watch in this college football playoff. I think Cam Scatabo and I think to a degree Tez Johnson are up there for me among my favorite players to watch in this playoff.
Well, there's a lot of bad things about the transfer portal, but those are two good things that happen in the transfer portal, right? Scatabo comes from Sacramento State and then he comes to Arizona State. Now he's playing on this big time stage. Tez Johnson coming from Troy now to Oregon, like playing on this big time stage. I think that's what's great about it. And you're right. When it comes to actual play on the field, that's the part that I love, man. Like, they actually, you can tell that these guys love the game. They just want to go out and play this game. They've had enough time off. They're ready to go out and do it. So I'm with you. Like, seeing the players get this hyped over it, I'm ready for it.
Meanwhile, Greg McElroy says Ducks Buckeyes will come down to mistakes.
Most of the time when it comes down to mistakes, it comes down to the quarterback play. Dylan Gabriel's got 6 picks this year. Will Howard's got 9 picks this year, including 2 against Michigan. Will Howard has at times taken some chances with the football that he does not need to take, not in a game like this. Those downfield throws in one-on-one situations, those are pretty, I think, pretty safe throws. Outside the numbers, safe throws. He's going to have to be aggressive and accurate on those to avoid some key mistakes by throwing it over the middle.
Hard to disagree with that. You know, in these big games, Steven, people say these games are more often lost than they are won. And it's a matter of opportunities. Are you the one giving the opportunity to the opposition? And in course, are you also the one making the most of the opportunities presented to you? Even though Dylan Gabriel's got this wealth of experience, doesn't mean he won't make a mistake along the way. It could happen. I do trust him more, though, than Will Howard, I think, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I think that is a big key, is Will Howard has made some big-time mistakes in these losses, even in their win against Penn State, threw a pick six. I don't trust that guy, but it's one of those things where he holds the keys and he holds the keys to a very talented and very expensive car. And so if he doesn't make mistakes, is it good enough for Ohio State just to roll it out there and win that game?
Well, speaking of expensive cars, we know Nick Cody drives one and he's on the line with us now. Nick Cody, you were on an 09 Ducks roster that played in a Rose Bowl against Ohio State. Here we go again. Yeah. We got it once again.
Yep. Yeah, I got to start in that 2012 win against the Badgers too.
And oh yeah.
I'm not driving anything right now. I'm actually in the Seattle light rail, headed to the train station. I'm coming home to Eugene and taking off at 2 a.m. on a road trip with some great Oregon fans. Shout out to T-Rod. Anybody that knows the T-Rod tailgates knows he's the man. And I'm Rose Bowl bound, baby.
What's your score prediction, Nick, for these Duckies?
Oh man, I was really feeling the score of my game, like 38-35-ish. But then I look at these defenses, And I don't know, especially with, you know, the Oregon getting to self-scout themselves for a week. I think that's going to be really important. I think we're going to have some lockdown run defense after that Big Ten championship game. So I'm going to go Oregon Duckies 30, Ohio State Buckeyes 14. Go Ducks. Two score wins. See you guys, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Great to hear from you. That's a perfect voice to hear on our last live show of the year before the Ducks in a Rose Bowl from the Seattle Light Rail. How about that? And the long road trip coming up from Eugene to L.A. If anybody else is doing that, give us a shout. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I love that he didn't want to be too homerish. He's like, yeah, two scores.
Exactly. Hey, if that game finishes anything close to what the 2011 season Rose Bowl, New Year's Day 2012, finished with Russell Wilson just not getting the spike off in time. Kind of all the
Will, like Will Howard
slide. Kind of like the Will Howard slide. If you can beat a Big Ten opponent with a last second miscue like that, I think that's saying you'll take the win any way you can get it. All right, 5-5 coming up next before Lions, Niners, and Monday Night Football. Steven and Judah here on the Bald Faced Truth.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the ball face truth.
All right, final push to the end of the year here. Best of show tomorrow with Canzano's best interviews with Dan Lanning and Rob Mullins, among others. On the New Year's Eve show, off Wednesday, back Thursday with a live show as well, reacting, of course, to Ducks Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn with you, taking you up till about 5:15 for Lions, Niners, Monday Night Football, last Monday night game of the regular season. Lions trying to go undefeated on the road this year. No team in the league has gone undefeated on the road this season. Lions trying to do it with a win tonight as 3.5-point favorites. Stephen Vaughn, let's finish strong. Let's start with the 5-5.
The 5-5.
Number one, Stephen. What do you got?
I like that.
This always happens at number one.
Every time. Here's a story, Judah, that we're...
Number one.
Nailed it.
For the first time here. Number one, here's a story we're going to hear a lot more as we go on here with college basketball. But six former Florida State basketball players are suing Florida State head basketball coach Leonard Hamilton today, alleging that he failed to make a good on a promise to get each of them $250,000 in name, image, and likeness. Darren Green Jr., Deontay Green, Cameron Fletcher, Josh Nickelberry, Prima Spears, and Jalen Worley are the plaintiffs. And they filed suit against Leonard Hamilton in the Leon County Circuit Court, and their attorney was Darren Heitner. They shared a 20-page complaint. They said the former players alleged that Hamilton promised them money from his, quote, business partners, and the lawsuit says they walked out of a practice last season over missed payments, and they actually intended to boycott a game against Duke on February 17th. Now, they ended up playing that game. They lost after Hamilton supposedly guaranteed that they would be paid, but they never were, according to the suit. None of the plaintiffs are on the team anymore, any of the six players, four of them. Two of them ran out of eligibility, other four transferred. But here's a story, Judah, that's going to happen more and more often, that these kids get promised money, don't get paid. Get it in writing, guys. Get it in writing if you want to get your money. Remember Matthew Sluka with UNLV, left over $100,000. These guys at Florida State, supposedly $250,000.
Yeah, definitely. You get it in writing, I think it's great advice for anything in life. A little surprised this happened under Leonard Hamilton. I had a pretty high opinion of him, but this doesn't necessarily change it all that much. But at the same time, I thought he would navigate these waters better than this. And clearly he hasn't.
Number two.
Well, former Beaver great? Damian Martinez, running back, he has announced that he is going to be heading to the NFL. The 20-year-old will turn 21 on January 31st when he heads to the draft. Of course, he played for Miami this past season, ran for 1,002 yards and 10 touchdowns. A lot of it, though, was 179 yards in their Pop-Tarts Bowl against Iowa State. But first 2 years at Oregon State, last season, almost 1,200 yards his first year, his freshman season, almost 1,000. Got let down by injuries in that Vegas Bowl, but was the offensive freshman of the year in the Pac-12. But Damian Martinez heading to the NFL after 3 years in college. What should Beaver fans feel about this? I mean, 1 year was kind of up and down with the Miami Hurricanes. They didn't end up getting to the CFP. Didn't work out exactly like he planned. But, I mean, I feel like Beaver fans have to still feel somewhat gratitude towards this guy or not.
It's a really good question. I don't know. In my head, I still think of him as... I was disappointed by the way he left because he publicly pledged his allegiance to Oregon State in the midst of turmoil, then backed out and went to Miami. And I know kids are young and they're kind of dumb on social media, and he probably fits that bill with the way that he handled that in particular. But outside of that, I'm excited to see what this guy is at the NFL. I wonder if we'll look back on the 2023 season where the Beavers were, 8-2?
Yeah.
At one point before their...
I mean, they were the
before
top...
Before Jonathan pretty much decided
to leave.
They
were the top-rated two-loss team in the CFP.
And Oregon was doing Oregon things. And... We'll look back on what Bucky Irving did at Oregon, what he's doing in the NFL. We'll look at what Damian did at OSU and what he does in the NFL.
How do you think he translates to the NFL?
I think well. I think really well. I was actually kind of surprised. You know, he shared the backfield a decent amount in Miami.
Yeah.
Their problem was not offense. Mario could not figure out the other side of the ball. But I think he'll look good and play well in the NFL. And obviously young, to your point, 21 years old. Not even
20,
until...
20, yeah, going to be 21 at the end of January.
At the end of January, he'll turn 21 and be eligible to, you know, for the draft
and
anyway.
Only 3 years of, you know, punishment on that body. Like
not a lot of tread, yeah. Right?
Reminds me a lot of Braylon Allen with the Jets.
Yeah.
Went to Wisconsin. Super young, super big, powerful.
Yeah. I don't think he's quite as big as Braylon Allen. That Braylon Allen's massive. But he is a pretty big guy, isn't he?
Damian's listed at like 6 foot, 235, 237, something like that.
Yeah, I think he's going to be great in the NFL. I wonder, relative to Steven Jackson, how will his Beaver pro career go at the running back position? Beavers have not had a lot of NFL type of running backs, certainly since Steven Jackson. And I think Damian Martinez could be the next one in line, and I'll be interested to see where his career goes. I'm optimistic on how good of a player he'll be.
Number three.
I'm also curious to see what draft stock for running backs will be like.
Yeah.
Kind of since Bucky's done so well. In Tampa,
yeah,
as well.
The NHL, they have fined the Dallas Stars $100,000 due to because they cheated. They're the New England Patriots. They fined them because they held a disallowed practice on Thursday during the three-day holiday week. Now, according to the NHL, they have bylaws that say December 24th, December 25th, and December 26th shall all be off days for all purposes, including travel, and no club may request a player's consent to practice on such days for any reason. Well, according to the Dallas Morning News, the Stars had a practice that was supposedly optional for the young players on the team, but then Stars coach Pete DeBoer later clarified to say it was, quote, voluntary ice, end quote, not an optional practice, according to the Dallas Morning News. So they got fined $100,000. Now, you know, in theory, the reason they don't do this, have these practices, is the young players skating could have supposedly given them an advantage in their next game when no one else is practicing. They are practicing, but it didn't matter. They lost to Minnesota 3-2 in overtime.
They lost to Minnesota. That's pretty funny.
So they didn't even win.
Well, I was out for dinner last night, and obviously there was football on the TVs, but one of them had NHL on ESPN. It was Blackhawks Stars in Chicago, and I think Dallas won that game. I don't know the final score, but it was 3-1 when I left. So part of me wondered if that did serve them an advantage, but you're saying they lost their very next game. Voluntary ice? Yeah, okay. That's what
we
the coach
all know
said.
That as a coach.
That means you're cut if you don't show up.
When your coach says this is a voluntary practice, that means you show up.
Number four.
Well, we've seen numerous high-profile athletes get their houses robbed. And the FBI is now warning pro athletes to be vigilant as groups of organized thieves are targeting these stars' homes in search of high-priced valuables when they are on the road. Now, Luka Doncic became the latest one as he got his place robbed.
Really?
Yes. And this, of course, happened to Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. It's also happened to Joe Burrow. We talked about that because he had a hot model on his payroll, which is great. Bobby Portis Jr., Tyler Seguin also had their places robbed as well. The feds are saying organized theft groups bypass alarm systems and use Wi-Fi jammers to block Wi-Fi connections and disable devices that cover security cameras. And so the FBI is now urging athletes to beef up security and take note of all their valuables and limit posting the valuable things that they have on social media while they're away from their home. So this is a real thing. Organized crime is figuring it out. Like, hey, look, there's a Monday Night Football game between the Lions and the 49ers. None of the 49ers are going to be home. Let's go rob their house.
Yeah, exactly. And same with the Lions. Like, you know.
Yeah, in Detroit. Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
Sad world we live in.
That is kind of sad, you know, and I would like to think that there's other ways to protect your estate more effectively. I'm still surprised. Maybe these guys are just too sophisticated for my being. I don't know, but I'm surprised that guys are able to get in there and break in, but maybe the technology is just that good.
Number five.
I'd like to have enough stuff that someone... want to break into my...
Or I was smart enough to steal people's stuff.
Exactly.
No. Last one, Judah. I just wanted to give us time to give one last predictions for the college football playoff as we go forward, because we're not going to be back until
Thursday.
Yeah. So let's just get it going here. We got a college football playoff. The first game, the 31st. Which one's that? That's Penn State, Boise State. I like Boise plus the points. I like Arizona State plus the points, but I think Texas wins. I think Penn State wins. I like Oregon to win, and I like Notre Dame to win.
I will zag with you on a couple of these. I will take Penn State, and I will reluctantly I'll lay the points, even though I'll be rooting like heck for Boise. I think Penn State comfortably gets to the Orange Bowl. I like Notre Dame. It's just, you know, I like Notre Dame, and I think the legs of that guy Leonard is going to be the difference. Notre Dame against Penn State in the Orange Bowl is my pick. Texas and Oregon in the Cotton Bowl is my pick as well. Although I will take, how about this? I will say Texas covers the 13, but it's because Arch Manning comes in the game and dominates. That will be my bold prediction. You have the same thing. You have Texas, Oregon, but you have Penn State and Notre Dame as well. Yes. But Boise, you have all the other underdogs.
I got all the dogs covering.
So that's gonna be fascinating. Ducks at 2 p.m. Wednesday in the Rose Bowl. We'll be back Thursday tomorrow. Rob Mullins, Dan Lanning, in a best of edition on the show. 3 to 6 tomorrow for Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn. Thanks for being here as well. John will be back in the chair later this week to enjoy your holiday. Happy New Year to everybody listening here on the Bald Faced Truth and the BFT Radio Network.